This is recording number one. It's the editor's editorial remarks and issues. I am Walter Eldon. I am the founding and updating editor of this IEEE Ethics History Repository. I am a life senior member of IEEE and the Society on the Social Implications of Technology, SSIT, and a member of IEEE since a student at the University of Florida in 1957. I founded the IEEE Concerned Ethics Volunteers, the CEV, in 2017, a Blue Ribbon Ethics Advisory Group, which has worked unsuccessfully to yet get advice on ethics and ethical support restored to the IEEE members. In searching around for factual data, approved reports, and so forth for this update, I was promised help from senior staff at IEEE, which never occurred. Also, I contacted various chairs of the committees, got very little information, factual information from them. So, as I have written in the repository, I've had to rely upon first and secondhand accounts. A lot of which has been the members of the IEEE Concerned Ethics Volunteers, the CEV, which I will now introduce. I will identify the members who make up the Concerned Ethics Volunteers, the CEV. There is, first of all, Dr. Stephen Unger, who I consider to be the father of IEEE ethics. Steve was very active in getting IEEE to join and submit an amicus curiae legal brief in the Bart case in 1975. He also served as chair of the ethics committee at the time that it was purged and we were all disbarred from any further work in the ethics arena. Further, Steve was very active with myself and Victor Zoris when the draft material for USAB was being created to create a member conduct committee. USAB was creating its own proposals, and the board of directors had Jim Furman, an attorney member of IEEE, prepare theirs. Then they were brought together. Well, Steve headed up the work session at the holiday at the hotel in Manhattan on a Saturday morning in May 1977, which sketched out on a large easel draft board the framework for what has become and codified as member discipline bylaws, policies, and procedures. Likewise, I took the lead and led the task force, for the USAB task force, developed similar flow diagram and material, which created the approach to be taken when a member requested ethical support and ethical advice. I submitted my copy directly to the History Center, maybe 10 years later, but it got misplaced. So Steve led the discipline procedures. I led the ethics advice and ethical support in the USAB proposal, which was merged with the board of directors at a meeting, which I presented was the USAB version in San Diego, November 1977, which created the Member Conduct Committee February 1978. Then there's Ray Larson. Ray, to me, has been like a father of wisdom, always keeping me on track and steering me in probably the best directions to go. He's very active in providing, with IEEE, electrical power systems to underdeveloped regions of the world. He's received an award for that. One additional credit to Ray, when we were searching for what to call ourselves, he suggested, and we adopted the term IEEE Concerned Ethics Volunteers, the CEV. Dr. Charles Turner in the UK, he's a past chair of the Ethics and Member Conduct Committee. He replaced me when I was summarily removed during the purge of 1998, when everything ethics-wise support and advice was shut down. Charles currently chairs the IEEE Life Members Committee. Charles was also instrumental, without realizing it, but in 2015, when I first got back into ethics work and started researching why we were not supporting advice and support, I came across his slide presentation in 2008, and in it, slide number 11 had this statement at the bottom, which basically said that IEEE will not get involved in conflicts between employees and employers. And that is the only basis that I can find in writing that prohibits or attempts to prohibit the providing of ethics support and ethics advice. But it's at the very bottom of the governance chain. It has no bearing at all. It's never been approved by the board. It just sits there as a sentence which got added in the EMCC Ops Manual. I'm pretty emotional about this because that is exactly the state of affairs. Then there is Dr. Martha Sloan. She has two important credentials. First of all, she was the first woman president of IEEE. And she was the chair of the Member Conduct Committee when I served on it. She also introduced a ethics conflict resolution service, which I edited for her. It was prepared to go to the board. It never did, and it was never explained why and what happened, but it was one of the other items that was purged. One last item about Martha. She was present and chaired the meeting in the Holiday Inn in Newark, New Jersey in 1998, when former president and member of the Member Conduct Committee, Wally Reed, expressed his statement, which is at the bottom of the items in 1.3 and 1.4 in the EMCC Ops Manual, which basically says the IEEE will not get involved in conflicts between employees and employers. That's the origin of that statement. And then we have Victor Zoris, a licensed professional engineer in Long Island, very active in the Long Island section. He was very active in operating the successful IEEE Ethics Hotline and contributed with us when it was transferred over to the Online Ethics Center after that was shut down. And then we have another woman, a young woman, Janet Barrett. She formerly was with the Amarillo Aeronautical University, and she was the section chair when I spoke to the Daytona Beach section in December of 2015. In this introduction, I will provide an outline and a summary of the materials to be presented. Most will be previously written articles, proposals, findings, and recommendations for improving providing ethics advice and ethical support to IEEE members. I also offer my findings, concerns, issues, and recommendations for improving communications from IEEE management to the members. I wish to highlight, though, the fact that in working on this updating, I have requested at the highest levels of IEEE management and the executive staff assistance and gaining access to the important documents needed to establish the actual approved history developed by various committees and the board. Unfortunately, that has been unsuccessful because I have received practically nothing from the staff or the committees. Thank you. Let's begin. Where do things stand today, and how did we get there? IEEE is the world's largest professional society. It was founded in 1884, practiced alone until the IRE was founded, and in 1912, the first code of ethics was adopted, and IRE got established in the same year. IEEE then was formed in 1963. From 1884 until that time, 1963, the Institute and its forerunners only delved in technical activities. It wasn't until the members led by USAB in the early 70s amended the Constitution to add professional activities along with technical activities, making IEEE a full-rounded professional society of a technical nature. Let's begin by referring to IEEE's members, who provide engineering services to those who hire them, as the employee professionals they are, rather than as just ordinary employee workers. We have an Ethics and Member Conduct Committee, the EMCC, which operates under 42-year-old established governance policies. But while it is authorized to provide member discipline, ethics, advice, and ethical support, under policy 7.10 and 7.11, services to his members for the past 22 years has only provided the single service of discipline under an unidentified governance authority. With various IEEE boards providing succeeding committees to look into these matters since 2016, none has put before any of these five boards solutions to resolve these two denial of important services to the members. However, I and others, particularly the concerned ethics volunteers, put forth various papers, proposals, recommendations, drafts to the various committees. Some were ready to go directly to the board for consideration. And during those years, 2016, 17, 18, and 19, none of them really got before the board for consideration. However, new insights and legal arguments have recently been expressed, which appear to be capable of correcting this situation finally, such that ethics advice and ethical support could be restored easily to the members. One impediment to this over the years, 2015-2020, has been an invisible arm over the IEEE operations, which has worked to prevent appointed volunteer committee chairs and executive support staffs from advancing these correcting steps, keeping all that the committees and board's actions have taken to remain in secret, thus preventing the IEEE members from learning what their elected representatives ever decided and approved. There are several changes and improvements that are recommended for making the current Ethics and Member Conduct Committee more responsive and accountable to the members. Two such improvements are, one, to decentralize the single Member Conduct Committee out of the Ethics and Member Conduct Committee, which is a single entity, out into the IEEE regions. Doing this will make the various decentralized member conduct committees more responsive to their local norms, laws, and customs, rather than try to have it interpreted by one single entity residing in New York. However, the ethics committee itself is recommended to be retained as a single entity overseeing all of the regions. One overriding issue needing attention is to solve the lack of communications from the board and its committees out to the members by enabling the Spectrum and Institute publication staffs to attend board and committee meetings and to report regularly on board, executive committee, and committee work and actions to the members. One benefit will be to get the members more aware of issues being decided and to raise the participation in annual elections above the poor 2019 figure, 13.95%. In the event most of these improvements do not get board and committee backing, then the IEEE membership may choose to amend the IEEE Constitution themselves, like was done in 1972-73, when professional activities were added for the first time since the original AIEE was founded in 1884 and the first code of ethics later enacted by AIEE in 1912. The current IEEE Code of Ethics, which IEEE has today, contains a very high-level set of statements. What now is needed are more specific implementation guidelines tailored to the vast number of different technical specialties IEEE's societies specialize in. Therefore, it is recommended for each society under the TAB Technical Activities Board be the ones which develop their own needed technical guidelines documents. Current examples are what the Computer Society and the Global Artificial Intelligence Design Initiative have done on their own. Now, there are two new additional activities needed to facilitate increasing the effectiveness of the current Ethics and Member Conduct Committee function. One, to designate there being an EMCC watchdog to oversee its operations and for making recommendations to the board for advancing it. To me, the Society on Social Implications of Technology, the SSIT, is the most logical one to take on that function. As part of this watchdog function of the SSIT, here's something that really is needed. For the last 42 years, the bylaws only require the EMCC to issue an annual report directly to the board. This report never gets out into the public. The members never hear what their member conduct committee worked on during that year, any cases that came before it, like discipline, advice, or support, or what the dispositions of those were. In other words, they're completely unaware that there is an Ethics and Member Conduct Committee. I've been saying, and no one has ever challenged me, that less than 1% of our membership, now that's around maybe 4,300 people, even know there is an Ethics and Member Conduct Committee. If someone can disprove me, please do. That's less than 1%. So how can we be ethical if we're not aware that we have a committee to discipline, provide ethics advice, and ethical support? So I recommend that the EMCC be changed such that it is required to publish two reports each year, one at 6 months and one at the end of the year, and report on what it did, what's its activities, what cases came before it, how are they disposed, what are the issues, what are new things that need to be done. Those are just some of the things that should be out in the public from the Ethics and Member Conduct Committee, in my humble opinion. Now, I have worked on something, and I'm going to add it to this repository. Information that's never been made available in the public, except when I wrote the only report from the Member Conduct Committee, and I wrote it at the 20th anniversary, and I was able to summarize the types of cases that were held and what their disposition was. Well, I have access to the data for the last 10 or 12 years, which shows the number of cases that were of discipline, requests for advice, requests for ethical support, and what the disposition of them was and what the averages were. For example, there was a candidate for the president of IEEE that made the statement that the reason we can't do ethical support is that the workload for discipline is so heavy. Well, the data will show you that the workload for the first 20 years when all three services were provided is practically the same as it's been for the last 20 years. And for the last 20 years, they've only worked on discipline. They didn't even handle the other two. Anyway, let the data show what the truth is, and we react positively from that. Thank you. Two. Either restore an ethics hotline function or establish a combined ombudsman whistleblower advisory function, which members may have access to as ethical dilemmas arises in their respective practices. Providing good informed ethics guidance should reduce the number of formal requests for advice and or ethical support made to the EMCC in the future. I will develop and add more suggestions under this editorial comment section as work progresses on updating. Thank you.